No, when I started, it was a three.
Good afternoon, everyone. With that gavel, I am going to convene the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is the 27th of April, 2017, and we are here for the purpose of continuing our conversation with the Department of Employment. I'm going to invite them to come forward as I open our public hearing on House Bill 5016. Ms. Dyster, where are we at?
Well, it's actually House Bill 5007, so I apologize for the error on your agenda. It is correct in OLIS, which is our controlling document.
So we were properly posted.
Yes, we were properly posted.
So I got to hear more about managed reform.
Anyway, we are talking today about Policy Option Package 101, which you will recall in the governor's budget has about $6 million in several positions. They have been working, the Employment Department has been working since the beginning of session to really take a harder and closer look at that. They did make a presentation to the JLC IMT committee meeting on, I believe it was April the 13th. And presented a winnowed down version of that. You will see a transmittal memo from that committee with their recommendation with regard to the project that is currently posted to OLIS. And just to summarize, the JLC IMT committee staff basically is recommending approval of that modified package, provided that the agency continues to follow all the appropriate steps with regard to reporting and stage gate and all of those strictures that we have set up to continue to keep the legislature informed of progress on these information technology packages.
Excellent. Senator.
If I could just offer, I gave Ms. Erickson a pretty hard time in my office and her colleagues about this package, but as the I'm supportive of it, but as the legislative session continues, I think that this report back that Ms. Dyster made mention to is going to be really important. The Department of Revenue, that was one of the most thoroughly vetted IT projects that I think the legislature has been involved in, apparently is having lots of problems. And in my view, the agency has not been forthcoming. In general government, was it only yesterday? Day before yesterday.
Yes.
Day before yesterday, we learned that a DAS project to replace all of the telephones has been shut down since January. Nobody bothered to tell the legislature. We've been in town, and so it's now a problem. And so it's both, I mean, the legislature wants to know about what's going on. The least delightful thing for us is surprise. And frankly, to have DAS hide the fact, and I can't think of a better word, hide the fact that that phone system failed in January and they don't have a time certain to get it back up is problematic. And so we have all this stage gate and this kabuki theater to get to a certain place. But so far, even with all of the fail safes, we've got failures. So I just, against that backdrop, want to put it on the record and just tell you, I'd so much rather, as you get underway, have you come in here and say, here it is, warts and all, than I would finding out about it by accident and feeling as though it had been intentionally hidden from legislative view.
Well, thank you for that, Senator. Well, Ms. Erickson, welcome. Let me begin by apologizing. We had originally scheduled about 90 minutes for this presentation, but the House is reconvening at 2 o'clock, and while they could probably get by without me, I just don't believe they can do anything without Representative Reardon, Meek, and Noble. So we're going to have to adjourn just before 2 o'clock. Why don't we go ahead and jump right in?
Thank you. Co-Chair Gomber, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Kay Erickson. I am the director of the Oregon Employment Department. We're back today to complete our testimony focusing on modernization and our key performance measures. You'll hear from me, Graham Slater, deputy director, and Gary Tyler, the chief administrative law judge of the Office of Administrative Hearings. Also at the table is Michelle Lisper, DAS chief financial office analyst. As you heard from us in February, modernization is our key initiative. The goal of modernization is to replace core business and IT systems to better meet the needs of our customers and improve data security. Our core systems supporting unemployment insurance functions were designed in the 1990s, long before the widespread use of the internet to transmit information and conduct business. These are mainframe systems written in COBOL programming language. Our workforce operations job matching system is 13 years old, and we all know how much technology has changed even in the last decade. Business needs are continuously evolving, making our business processes increasingly inefficient as we deploy workarounds because we are limited by our aging infrastructure. We want to serve Oregonians and Oregon businesses better. The department has implemented many systems over time to respond to changes in federal and state requirements and to enhance our services. While these systems solve immediate issues, they are not fully integrated and have only limited compatibility with today's technology. This architecture is extremely difficult to maintain. For example, one simple program update requires multiple changes through a maze of subprograms, and this complexity creates a high probability of introducing errors. It is also increasingly more difficult to hire IT staff with skills in legacy applications. 20% of our IT workforce is eligible to retire today, with 38% eligible to retire in the next 5 years.
Legacy applications, that's what we're calling COBOL now?
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. As we testified in February, we're not the only state with an aging infrastructure. This map is specific to unemployment insurance systems and shows the status of modernization projects across the nation. Because Oregon is neither first nor last to modernize, we have the opportunity to learn from early states' mistakes and take advantage of the fact that there are now a number of new systems available. A 2010 survey by the National Association of State Workforce Agencies confirmed that many states face the same challenges we do. Most of the UI systems in the country still run on mainframes, a computer technology that is not only out of date, but increasingly expensive to maintain. Parts are hard to find, and COBOL programming language, developed in 1959, is no longer widely taught.
No longer, that's generous. No longer widely taught.
Well, we have legacy employees who handle it. Thank you.
The Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act was signed into law in 2014 and is the first legislative reform of the public workforce system in 15 years. The law requires states to submit a single coordinated plan for all workforce development programs and seeks to improve effectiveness and streamline the workforce system overall. Last fall, Governing Magazine did a survey of state officials responsible for implementing this act and found that 81% of respondents from 41 states think the updated law is positive, especially as it relates to improved collaboration among workforce agencies. But states still have technology gaps and cannot effectively implement the law within the constraints of their current business systems. Although we have the same concerns, challenges, and constraints as our counterparts in other states, not all workforce programs are structured in the same way across the country. This map shows the results of a 2015 survey, again by the National Association of State Workforce Agencies, around the organizational structure of the workforce programs in each state. The table at the bottom lists the core programs as identified by the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act and gives a high-level summary of whether those programs exist within a single agency or not. Looking at the map, the table and the map are color-coded, so you can see the number and types of programs that are consolidated in each state. So if you look at the map, for example, the teal-colored states are those that have 6 out of the 9 required core workforce programs in one agency. Oregon falls into that category, along with 22 other states. So I'm sharing this graphic to illustrate that even though the federal government authorizes and provides the guidelines for workforce programs, and many states are replacing their business infrastructure. States are still not all alike. We hope to be able to procure off-the-shelf products that have already been successfully implemented elsewhere. And before we can make a judgment about whether another state's modernization effort might benefit us, we really need to understand the similarities and differences between our service delivery model, our customers, our partners, the data sharing requirements, and the information technology architecture. In addition to research on systems and structures, we've begun to gather data also on the costs incurred by other states for replacing their core business systems. As you can see, there's a really wide range of costs and also comparability. For the few states we've found that have replaced the three core systems we're talking about, unemployment insurance tax, unemployment insurance benefits, and our employment services systems, the cost ranges from $97 million in Washington to $340 million in California. Before you all gasp, it's hard to make use of this information until we know more, because as I've just described, each state's path to modernization is somewhat unique based on their organizational structure and their IT architecture. So, for example, some states developed their own systems in-house or joined together with other states in a consortium. Some states procured separate systems and hired an integrator. Other systems modernized their core programs individually and didn't integrate them. Comparison is also difficult because costs are not uniformly collected and reported. So the point of this is we'll continue to gather cost information as we continue to learn more about how other states modernized and how similar our path is to theirs.
Excuse me, Representative Meek.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I had limited background in computer information systems and computer information system management back in the 90s. So this is all very antiquated. But we were programming in COBOL. But co-chairs, my question is that as we're looking as a state at long-term cost containment, that we're allowing all of our agencies to reinvent the wheel in their own different fashion, and how can we as a body try to get this under control and maybe come up with some efficiencies to allow them to not cost us trillions of dollars to build all these different software systems that don't communicate, they're incompatible, and potentially could be disastrous and antiquated, where we don't have any way to really improve. Do we have any resources for us to try to come up with a system or collaboration with this? And this is just a freshman speaking, but
let me give you an answer from a non-freshman that we got yesterday or day before, talking to the state CIO about the phone system. And that was basically, nobody's making the agencies cooperate. I said, how about DAS? That's the mother of all agencies that's supposed to promote best business practices across agencies. Nope. How about the governor's office? Nope. So we now have a broken telephone system with people going to cell phones rather than using the multi-million dollar phone system that we're buying. Basically, we were told by the chief information officer, that there's no way to force everybody to find savings and work together. At least that was certainly what he said directly about the phone system, and one can extrapolate that's what he meant about other IT. So I would say that maybe this committee would want to drag him in here and ask the same question, or invite him to join us and ask him the same question.
Well, thank you, Co-Chair, because I think we need to get a group of us together, and I mean legislators, both sides, and that's not a good answer. And I think that we, in order to really get down to how our agencies operate and how get them become more efficient and use resources together and not reinvent the wheel every other day or every other year or whatever. It's only been 30 years, right? But in this it's a catastrophic type of, response right now, because we are so far back and far behind in our technologies, and we're more inefficient even providing the services to our consumers. So I would love to speak with anybody that's willing to listen to find out how we can resolve this.
Well, I think you'll find some active listeners here, Representative. I think your point is absolutely salient. One of the things I'm looking for is not to build a series of silos that don't communicate with each other as we restructure IT systems in a variety of different agencies. One of my concerns has been that we have agencies that can't communicate with each other. Now, an example of that might be right here where the good folks at the Department of Employment are one of what I call the Big Five, the five agencies that combined are carrying about $3 billion in debt, and yet they don't have the ability to communicate with other agencies that may be paying money out to find out what tools we have to try and recover the $150 million that is currently $170 million is currently due to the Employment Division. So improvements are going to give us the opportunity to pursue those kinds of efficiencies and savings, if we do them with a big picture in mind.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, co-chairs.
Thank you. So I think you've laid the fertile ground for this next slide, which is we can't do what we do without our partner agencies. So this is a high-level overview of the partners inside and outside of state government with whom we interact routinely to perform key functions of the agency. We can't conduct business without them. Just to orient you to the slide, the blue shaded boxes identify the department's program areas currently in scope for modernization. The green shaded box identifies employment department business areas affected by but not currently in scope. The lightly shaded box throughout the slide represent our external partners who access, send data to, or receive data from us. So, for example, if you go to start at the top left of the slide, a check for unemployment insurance benefits cannot be processed without us interacting with a local bank and the state treasury. If you move to the center of the slide, you see that services available through our workforce centers depend on collaboration with other state agencies, local workforce boards, federal partners, and community nonprofit organizations. And then for each of the core business functions shown here, there's also a data sharing box identifying partners who are dependent upon information from our systems in order to conduct their business activities. Okay, so the data we gather and share exists in many systems. Although we talk about three core program areas, unemployment insurance tax, unemployment insurance benefits, and workforce operations, there are many subsystems in place. This graphic illustrates how our internal systems are related. And again, we didn't purposefully build it this way. The system names are not legible, and they're not really actually necessary for today's purposes. The intent of sharing this diagram is to demonstrate the complexity and volume of disparate systems that must interact to support our programs. So as I said earlier, these systems have evolved over time. As laws and programs have changed and new requirements have been implemented, subsystems have been deployed to meet these immediate needs, creating this very complex system architecture. Not all of the data systems on the map will be replaced. The color shading on this version of the map identifies systems we expect to be in scope for modernization, at least at this point. The dark blue area identifies unemployment insurance benefit systems. The light blue shading identifies workforce operations systems. The green area identifies unemployment insurance tax systems, excuse me. And the orange boxes with bold outlines sprinkled throughout represent user interfaces or systems that are directly accessed by citizens and businesses.
Senator.
Ed, you've mentioned a number of different folks that could be, I think, legitimately characterized as stakeholders. Do you have advisory committees that give those folks a voice, your frontline employees, customers? I think much can be learned from listening to the people that have to manipulate the system every day.
Representative Gomberg, Senator Johnson, we have currently a steering committee, which is mostly internal executive level leaders. Our future path certainly includes steering committee input from our various stakeholders. Currently, we're working throughout the agency, so staff have access to vendor or state. We have several states who are coming in and demoing the systems they use currently, so staff have an idea of kind of what the future could look like, might look like, how their jobs might change.
The reason that I ask is, since we had this conversation in General Gov about the failed telephone system, I've been getting a series of emails from folks that are trying to use it, state employees. It seems to me that the things that were neglected are just no-brainer things. Folks that are hearing impaired, and the device doesn't account for the fact that they might wear hearing aids. It's simple stuff that is now helping to put sand in the gears of deploying the phone system. And I would just urge you to use every prophylactic at your disposal to get the people that are going to have to deal with this system for years an opportunity to comment on it.
Thank you. That's absolutely our intent. These are the steps and approvals, called stage gates, necessary in order for us to evaluate, procure, and implement replacement business systems as part of the modernization initiative. And as you know, we've talked about a little bit already, the stage gate process. It's a project management technique in which an initiative is divided into stages or phases separated by gates. The Office of the State CIO and LFO have jointly adopted a process for executive branch agency projects that includes four stages and required endorsements by both of those oversight groups before we can proceed.
Please.
You're probably the wrong person to ask, but I just want to get the question on the record. Who in LFO is in the Legislative Fiscal Office is your analyst for this?
Sean McSpadden.
Okay. Then this would be a question more properly directed to Mr. McSpadden, I would think. It's fine to see these the little graph there, and it's fine to see that there are different stages. What I learned from the failed experience with the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network, OWIN, now changed to the State Radio Project to cover the guilty, is that there is a fiscal obligation with each one of those stages up there. And I'd like to know what it is, because what happened with us with OWIN was we got in so deep before it was clear that the thing perhaps had lethal flaws that we crossed the Rubicon. You couldn't go back. And so I would like to know, where's the fiscal breakpoint? What's the dollar amount established with each one of those four portals so that we know how deeply in we are if there is a catastrophic occurrence that would cause us to need to exercise an off-ramp?
Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, actually we have a slide near the end of the deck that will show you exactly that, at least for the upcoming biennium, which is really, excuse me, that kind of the depth of our understanding at this point.
I would just respectfully ask LFO to continue to update that, because I think that frequently, because we work in multiple biennia, we work in multiple committees, we do not have the opportunity to see the totality of the state responsibility before we're in trouble. And you have little cutesy, busy diagrams that are hard to read. I want to know the off-ramp on the first series of activities, we will have already invested $100 million. I'm just making that up. But I want to know how deeply we're in and have a fairly thoughtful prognostication of how it looks going forward. And I know it's very early in the process for you to have all of these answers, but I would respectfully like the legislature to be informed at a macro level rather than multiple little mini bites that, oh, by the way, adds up to $600 million and we don't have a project.
I think that's fair. So as you can see from this estimated timeline, we expect the initiative to take several biennia to complete. Major milestones are represented here along with estimated timing, expected timing for stage gate approvals. We're at the very beginning, currently working on the feasibility study and process mapping. So at the far left of the timeline, as approved in the 2015 session, and then looking to the far right of the timeline, you can see that we would begin to implement systems in 2020.
Senator? For the professional staff, could I respectfully ask that this be scheduled for some committee, and I don't know what committees are going to meet in the interim, but I don't want to adjourn in July and wait until February of the next year to find out what's up. I would like regular incremental reporting at our ledge days, and if you come in and go, everything is hunky-dory, I'm good with that. But I'd sure rather find out about it in a predictable way than wait until next February and find out that we're in trouble.
Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, I would respectfully ask you to hold that thought till the end of the presentation. Where we are in the project now, there would be very little for us to report until February session. That's when we would complete the feasibility study we're currently doing.
I'm not going to give up. I want you to come in here even and just say we had 20 meetings with McSpadden and everything's fine.
Okay. All right. So the first major task is to complete a feasibility study. The purpose of the feasibility study is to create the roadmap for moving forward. We're making good progress in the plan we shared with you just a couple months ago. So we have a business-led executive-level steering committee that meets twice monthly. We hired a vendor to provide project management services. And in the last few months, we've begun to build the project team. So we've hired a program manager to lead the initiative and coordinate activities within the agency. Three business analysts to conduct research, provide analysis, and prepare documentation, and a vendor to work with us to produce the feasibility study. So as you know, we talked a bit about the vendor in February when we were here. The IT Support Center, a nonprofit organization that's part of the National Association of State Workforce Agencies, affiliated with U.S. Department of Labor. We chose them because they understand federal workforce programs and also work with other states in their modernization efforts.
Senator.
I feel silly asking this question, but I am educated to do so by previous events in the legislature. Have you scrubbed all of these folks, their resumes, to make sure that there are no conflicts, they're not closely associated with a particular vendor, that there is nothing in their vitas that are going to sell newspapers as a result of inherent conflicts?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, I would expect the answer to that is yes. I personally have not done that. The association that the IT Support Center is funded by dues-paying members, which are state employment departments across the nation. They are part of our national association, and again, they're affiliated with U.S. Department of Labor, so they don't actually sell a product. They've carved out a niche business to help states strategize and think about modernizing their legacy systems. So I think the answer to your question is I don't think there is anything for them personally to gain from this other than the contract that they have with us currently.
But you're hiring people.
Oh, sorry. I totally misunderstood your question.
Have these folks been, I mean, League of Oregon Cities frequently assists municipalities in hiring a city manager, and you would expect that they would do it, and I'm not picking on them, you would expect that they would do a good job. In a town in my district, not so much. And so what I'm trying to figure out is you're beginning to lay on staff. And we got into a problem with an ODOT audit where it turned out that the first selected vendor had a pretty lengthy and damaging communication with the state. And I just want to make sure that the folks that are doing this are as objective as possible, are as well qualified, and if the center that you pay dues to is looking at their resumes and opining on their professional qualifications, I guess I should be satisfied with that and just let it go. But I'm asking, as you're beginning to staff up to undertake this effort, are there any things that could raise any level of concern about conflict or affiliation or affection for certain vendors or any of those kinds of things that get us into trouble?
Currently, my answer to that would be no. So far, what we've hired are three business analysts. All three have been state employees. I can't recall much about their backgrounds in the moment, but highly qualified and experienced.
Last but not least, are any of them associated with failed IT projects in other agencies?
No.
Okay.
For the record, I think that was a no.
I took it as a no. Thank you. Yes, shaking heads.
Yes. The feasibility study will include six major deliverables. So a business needs assessment, documenting our core business processes to understand the as-is state and desired improvements. A system functionality and technology assessment to understand current systems, platforms, architecture, and data management. A gap analysis to identify the gap between what we have, what we want, and what's available. A market analysis to determine which solutions already exist that could best fit our needs. A strategic plan for the modernization initiative outlining timelines, milestones, costs, and risks. And finally, a readiness assessment identifying for each division of the agency our level of preparedness to actually undertake this project. This excerpt from a recent weekly status report shows we're on target for schedule, cost, and scope for this first step. We expect to complete the feasibility study at the end of the year, just prior to the 2018 session, which is why I was suggesting that the 2018 session would be an appropriate time for us to check back in with you. That brings me to a high-level look at the budget for modernization, such as it is what we know now. As a reminder, the department has one-time revenue from the U.S. Department of Labor that we're planning to use to fund this initiative. It's too early to have an estimate of total costs, so we've left some placeholders for upcoming biennia in this budget table. Currently, the biennial budget we have currently includes resources to contract for project management services, develop an initial business case, hire project staff, obtain quality assurance services, conduct a risk assessment, and submit for stage gate review. Although we're making great progress now, the agency did get a late start on this project, largely due to changes in key leadership roles, including the change of director, deputy director, and chief information officer. Because of the late start, some of the outcomes expected in this current biennium will shift slightly into the next biennium. And the table here shows our updated estimated expenditures based on our progress to date. We now expect to spend $1.4 million total in 2015-17, which is about one-third of the department's original request. The table also includes our updated estimate for next biennium. So when we were here for phase one of our budget hearings, I think off the cuff, Senator, I gave an estimate of $11 million total for the current biennium and next biennium. And that number was pretty accurate off the cuff. And it was based on our projections for the governor's budget. So we have more information now than we did 9 months ago when we developed that budget. And we're still learning a lot and gathering input from many different sources. We now have the project team on board that I talk about and the vendors. We've worked with the Office of the State CIO and LFO to better understand stage gate process, the timing, the deliverables of that. And we've met with subcommittee members and Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management Technology members to answer questions and get your input on the project. Taking all of that into account, as you heard from Ms. Deister, we've revised the limitation request for the policy package related to this initiative to $4.7 million. So eliminating six positions, 10 FTE or full-time equivalents, at about $2 million. So during the 2017-19 biennium, we're asking for approval of resources to complete the feasibility study, begin data mapping and data migration planning, document business and technical requirements at enough detail to develop and publish a request for proposal, and begin the vendor evaluation and selection process. We're asking for a total of 18 positions at approximately 14 full-time equivalents. Some of the positions carry forward from the current biennium, including the program manager, project manager, and three business analysts. Five of the positions will provide administrative and business support to the initiative, including clerical, procurement, quality assurance, communications, and change management functions. And eight of the positions will act as subject matter experts. The subject matter expert positions will be filled by experienced current employees who will be temporarily or intermittently assigned to the project, and we will hire new employees as needed to provide core services to backfill those subject matter experts' jobs while they're working on the project. Finally, the timeline shows our policy package estimated costs and project activities at certain points in time, and we've aligned this with end of fiscal budget years and the start of legislative sessions. The timeline illustrates when we expect to bring on resources and how those resources align with activities and stage gate approvals. So at the left of the page, again, for the current biennium, as of the start of session, we had hired five positions for a total of less than a quarter of a full-time equivalent and spent about $300,000. Through the end of the current biennium, we expect to hire four more positions, depending on the hiring freeze, for a total of nine at less than one and a half full-time equivalents and spend approximately $900,000. So the vertical line in this slide indicates the end of the biennium. So you can see in about a year from now, February 2018 session, we would have completed the feasibility study and be between stage gate one and two in the approval process. By that point, we would expect to have almost a full team, 17 positions contributing to the project. Again, though, only for a total of three full-time equivalents and $1.5 million in costs. And then at the very right of this slide, at the end of the biennium, next biennium, you can see the full package request of $4.7 million.
Question. Yes, Senator.
I'm assuming that when in each of those golden blocks, if you will, those aren't additional positions each time they appear.
excuse me. Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, and Senator Hansel, the way it works is there's a white line in between each of the gold blocks.
Got it.
The top is the incremental additional costs and positions up through that point, and below the line is the total of the project and positions up to that point. Does that make?
Yes, it does. I thought that was what it was. I appreciate it. I wanted to make sure.
Sure.
We're good.
In the interest of time,
please,
I'm going to hand it over to Graham Slater now and Gary Tyler to update you on key performance measures and outcomes.
So, Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, my name is Graham Slater. I serve as the Deputy Director for the Employment Department. And we're going to give you a quick overview. We will go very quickly on the performance measures where we're meeting the target. We'll give you a little more, maybe, explanation on the ones where we're not meeting the target, and we'll talk a little bit about some changes and one new measure that we'd like to request. And yeah, I am also aware of your time, so we'll move quickly. So key performance measures 1 and 2 for the Employment Department focus on the degree to which the job seekers that we serve as we work with our other partners in the workforce system are finding jobs and keeping jobs, and in both cases our performance in the last program year met the target. So I will just keep moving unless you have questions on those. Key performance measure number 3 assesses the average cost for us to help each of those job seekers find a job. We have actually never met the target for this measure, and in the last program year, as really often happens, the gap between the target and the actual costs increase for 2 reasons. The first is that the target has never been inflation adjusted, so it doesn't change to reflect increases in salaries, benefits, leases, those kinds of things. And then secondly, with the economy as good as it is right now, many Oregonians obviously are working, and so those who are still unemployed often have more barriers to becoming employed, so that means we do more work with them, and therefore that costs more. Key performance measure number 4 focuses on the speed with which...
Excuse me just a minute.
Let me go back to just one. You say that the chronically unemployed, tougher to work with. When do you guys just say we're not going to get there from here?
So Co-Chair Gomberg and Co-Chair Johnson, there's an expert in the room behind me who I don't think we have time to call to the table. I mean, I think there would be very few cases where we would literally reach that point, because we do work with a lot of the other partners in the workforce system who can provide support with training, you know, basic skills training, advanced training, whatever it may be. I'm sure there are people, I haven't lived that frontline life, where it is very, very difficult to make that match. Be happy to follow up if you'd like a little more conversation.
At some point, yeah.
Okay.
That'd be
Thanks.
Great. Thank
okay.
you.
So key performance measure 4 again, the speed with which eligible unemployed Oregonians receive that first benefit check. And as you can see, we are meeting the target, and that one is also a federal U.S. Department of Labor requirement for us. Number 5 focuses on the speed with which decisions about unemployment insurance benefits are made. And this one has been a big struggle for us, partly because of the federal funding levels, partly because of the computer systems that you've just been hearing about, and partly because at times we use our unemployment insurance resources to maybe make sure the wait times for our initial claims are lower, and therefore we divert resources from one priority to another to try to better serve the most number of Oregonians. There is really good news on this one, though, that since those annualized data, 46%, last week we were running at 71%. So we're really working hard to improve processes there, and obviously we're seeing some success. Number 6 looks at the cost per claim. So you saw the previous one was cost to help people find a job. This is the cost of processing claims. And we will be, in a few slides, requesting a change to this one. Currently, it looks at the total cost of the unemployment insurance work compared with the number of initial claims that are filed with us. And as you can see, we're not meeting the target on that one. And again, I'll give a little more background on that as we request a change. Many of the reasons, incidentally, are the same. Not inflation adjusted, so costs are going up, but the target doesn't change. Number 7 through 10 will all be administrative hearings measures, and Gary will talk about those in a second. Number 11 looks at the timeliness of cases heard by the Employment Appeals Board. That board heard about 1,400 appeals last year, and as you can see, they are well meeting their timeliness target. Number 7 looks at the speed with which we decide if a new business in Oregon is subject to the unemployment insurance taxes, and if they are, what their tax rate will be. The federal U.S. Department of Labor requires us to meet 70% for that measure. Our goal with the Oregon key performances is 80, performance measures is 80%. And as you can see, we're meeting the federal target, but not the Oregon ones. There was an anomaly, really, in the last year, and that was a large payroll reporting company that was reporting incorrectly from a time period point of view, and that has now been fixed. So we're thinking that will significantly help us to sort of move back towards the target. The last of the regular ones is customer satisfaction, and we have completely redesigned that survey. We're using a single, much improved survey to meet the needs not only of the legislative KPMs, but also of all of the workforce system partners statewide and for all of the local areas. So we're now surveying about 23,000 customers, and as you can see, 80% of them thought that our service to them was excellent or good. So we think that's a good start. We can obviously build and improve on that. It doesn't come close to the 95.5% target, and we're very aware of that. Frankly, the target, I think, is unattainable given the improved survey. And so we didn't have survey data at the time we submitted our annual reports, so we'll be looking at that before next time. So the changes we would like to make, the first two are simply changes to that did they find a job kind of idea based on the new federal statute, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. And we're simply asking to change our KPMs to match the federal new measures under that act. And if it's okay with you, I'm just skip over those because of the time. Number 3, we would like to...
I'm sorry. Representative.
Thank you. I appreciate that you want to be quick, but I'm curious how you come up with new targets for these new KPMs.
So thank you, Co-Chair Gomberg and Representative Noble. The new targets were negotiated with the U.S. Department of Labor, so it's something that all states are doing under this new federal act, and they're negotiated for the first 2 years of the act once it's been implemented, and then we will be going back with the Department of Labor to renegotiate once we know how the act's working and they know how the act's working. And in my notes that I didn't say because I was rushing, I was going to say that we would expect to come back to you at that point and share, you know, here's how we're doing, here's what the feds are thinking. Maybe we want to change that target and maybe we don't, but that's sort of a year or two from now.
Okay.
Okay? Thank you. So we are proposing to change the cost measure for unemployment insurance. Because right now, again, we're taking the total cost against initial claims. The short version is we would like to take a more refined cost of unemployment insurance, excluding, for example, a couple of grants that aren't totally relevant to the claims. And we would like to compare that with the total benefits paid, which is a much more complete measure of the program's usefulness than simply did someone file a claim. And we would then look at a target that's a ratio of the cost of doing that to the total amount of benefits paid across the state. And then for research, the research division, 2 years ago, this committee asked that we would have a measure for research. We had not done that in the past. Long story short, it's really difficult to measure the success of providing great information to people. So what we're proposing is to take our two most foundational economic surveys and set targets for ourselves. We're actually choosing the ones that the Bureau of Labor Statistics requires of us to say we need to meet good survey response rates on those so that everything else we do in research is good. That is, again, the short version. So with that, I will turn it over to Gary Tyler, and he'll have the rest. Thank you.
Thank you. Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, I'm Gary Tyler. Chief Administrative Law Judge.
We monitor four key performance measures. The first three are timeliness measures, and we're meeting all three of those. The first, measure number seven, originates with the Department of Labor and has to do with the timeliness standards for unemployment insurance cases. The second one has to do with the timeliness of all other cases that are referred to the Office of Administrative Hearings and is a combination of court mandates and agreements between the Office of Administrative Hearings and the agencies themselves as to what those timelines would be, and we're meeting that standard. The ninth measure has to do with the average days to issue an order for all types of cases that we receive, and we are meeting that standard. The final standard, key performance measure, is the cost per referral, and you can think of it as a bag of groceries. As the items in that bag change, so does the cost per item. And so the standard, the target was originally established back when we had a huge number of unemployment insurance cases being referred to us, and now that has decreased substantially. So the cost per item has gone up because there are more complex cases in that bag, if you will. We are proposing a change to KPM number 10 to make it more relative to what's going on in any given biennium by indexing it to the estimate that the Chief Administrative Law Judge is required to produce for the agencies that we serve each biennium. So we would tie the target date to match that estimate when you factor in the mix of cases and the cost that we predict will be incurred during that biennium. But we would propose that be changed each biennium. That would allow the legislature to monitor the effectiveness of those predictions made by the Chief Administrative Law Judge, and it would also be more relevant for each biennium as those mixes change depending on how the economy changes. So in a nutshell, that's where we're at with that.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, what I'm going to do, colleagues, is we're in a public hearing right now, and our rules do not require us to maintain a quorum for public hearings. I think we're pretty much at the end of the formal presentation. I think Senator Johnson may have had some questions she wanted to zero in on while we had some targets of opportunity here.
I have a general question.
Please go ahead, Representative Burden.
If we were to, thank you, Co-Chair Gomberg. If we were to have our new management information system, do you have a kind of a feel for what might happen to either the results or how the key performance measures might either be revised or performance would be improved? Is there a way to be looked at that system in light of what you're trying to accomplish? It's kind of a really broad question, but So,
Co-Chair Gomberg and Representative Ridgen, are you asking about the Office of Administrative Hearings system?
You have a bunch of things that you're trying to accomplish here. Things that you're measuring yourself against. And if we invest in the new management information system, how would that help you achieve your goals?
So, Co-Chair Gomberg, Representative
Ridgen. You can come back next week and tell me, but...
Oh, well, okay. I think one very, very easy answer is that on the unemployment insurance side, again, we have, as you saw, this sort of huge number of different systems, and so particularly on the unemployment insurance side, I think we can be much more efficient in processing them, so we don't have long wait times, for example. So that's the 30-second answer. Okay. And we'd be happy to talk to you.
Maybe an offline conversation be appropriate. It'd be great, Graham. Thank you.
Okay. All right, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing, and I think we are ready to adjourn the meeting. And we have anything else we need to cover today? Well, thank you. All right, then thank you for spending time with us during phase two. We will see you again, and I'm going to go ahead and adjourn.